Battlestar Galactica.
A lot more
cool.
Than enough.
Ended recently.
With, okay, so thought that it would be a good way to divide it up into like.
So rather than just talk about the ending now, I thought we'd try and keep you in suspense for at least 4 minutes. Maybe even 40 if we can stretch it that far.
Yes.
And just go through each season and talk about some of the key episodes, the key moments for us as fans watching it, and also the key moments for the characters in the show. You know, they were pretty brutal to their characters. Miniseries?
I think before we even jump into the episodes, we should probably start with, you know, the background of the series, which, of course, is a remake of another series, which had the same name, and had very similar themes, although it had very much more stronger fantasy tropes.
It had similar themes.
I think they ruined Starbuck in the original by making him a man.
Oh, totally. Oh, and what the hell was up with Boomer? You know, just, yeah, bad.
Boomer was token.
And Admiral Ty was boring.
Yes.
I must admit.
Number two.
Do you guys remember the title sequence of the A-Team?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was an intentional surprise shot. They didn't tell him that they were going to set a Satama pass. And he's like, oh, right. As you do. But yes, I thought it's important to bring up the fact that it's a remake and that lots of the themes of the original series are reflected throughout
the original series.
Yes, throughout the series, including in the opening of the miniseries where they do actually have the theme music.
Yeah. Yes.
I didn't pick that up in the opening of the miniseries.
Yeah, in the during the ceremony,
later.
The closing ceremony.
Yep.
Yeah,
the commissioning ceremony.
Yes.
Yes,
the documentary episode is where I went, wow, that's cool. But we are skipping ahead, aren't we?
Oh, well. So now that we're grounded.
Yeah, we're grounded. Oh dear. Who here has actually seen the original series?
So I'm seeing approximately
90%
of the room's hands up for
and
the benefit of people that aren't
how
here.
How much of the original series are we including in this?
All of it, especially the worst bits, because we're including the worst bits of BSG in this one.
It's when they get to Earth and they're bouncing above the trees because the gravity is lighter.
An invisible Vipers?
Oh, and then the Cylons are wandering around in the middle of Halloween and people think it's a great costume.
Wow, they must be so disciplined. Look how well they're doing that in formation and they're talking about the LA
highway. And
what
do you do with the
defense
screen
of the thing as well? Huzzah!
Sorry. Our stalling
couldn't
work. Ironically talking about robots.
Yes, I had that problem too.
But we were on Wall-E instead, so it wasn't quite the same.
We barely started. We were talking about miniseries and the original series.
Which
we've got 90% of the room are compliant for the original series, and very few people have actually watched all the websites.
Have you watched the original series?
Oh, I watched all the
webisodes. I didn't watch the original
series. Yay!
I watched the webisodes.
Yay!
As they came out, which I have to say was kind of emotional because it's so short.
Yeah.
It is hard, isn't it?
I
tend to batch them because
it was an interesting technique. I'm not sure how well it worked because the teaser style works well if you get a big enough bite that you're okay, but the biscuit-sized webisodes were a little bit hard to digest.
I'm sorry, Frackett, I'm watching Battlestar, not Lost. Give me closure at least every hour.
Sorry, question.
And yes, it was the first frack of the evening.
No, I said several times.
Oh, you did? Okay, so are we up to six?
At least.
Okay.
With the webisodes, I haven't actually seen them, so I'm really curious across the road people who have seen them, are they really good?
They're cleverly filmed. It was a different style. It was really compressed. They're well put together and they're well structured.
And
it hurt me to see such small little structured pieces in little bites, but I liked them in and of themselves, and I liked that they were experimental and interesting, and that they'd go into the trouble to effectively try and create such incredibly short pieces of story, and each piece was meaningful and interesting. Mm. And they had to do it really, really close up and really, really close in. So they stepped back. There's this thing where in your television, you've got sort of mid-range filming, and with movies, you step back a lot more. So TV actors, they don't have to do as much body language because it's about the face and the torso. With this, they went in even closer, and it was facial expressions and intense emotional stuff. They couldn't do the drawn-back scenes because they were tiny. And also, they, you know, they needed intimate emotional moments. And it was awesome.
Well, Razor's been added to the season 4 season thing, so it's...
Yeah.
I actually saw it in JV's the other day, where it was like, Razor, $30. Season 4, $25. Complete, including Razor. I can see a bug and
I have a plan.
Yes.
They have a plan. It's the next series. So the mini series. How well do you think it actually set the stage for the TV shows?
I thought it was great because I really like that Hilo guy, and I really wish it came back to be in the rest of the series because, you know, it gave us a good tragic hero who, you know, was willing to show the, you know, idea of altruism in the human race and why we should be redeemed. You know, looking forward to seeing that story continued in season 1.
Yeah, I was looking back over how I felt about it, and I didn't get into Battlestar Galactica immediately. In fact, I had lunch with someone who spoke to me at length about it for about for about an entire season, as I was vibrating with enthusiasm, until I went, right, okay, I'm going to start and watch the miniseries, and came back the next day and went, oh my god, and she just said, finally. I've been beaming these messages towards you for months. Now you understand my pain.
It does have pacing issues, though. I think it's really about 3 episodes worth of plot.
It
stretched out to 4, so...
There was a lot in there.
I'd say
I came out of it with a lot of questions.
And it did have a lot of, you know, we're going to tell you the same piece of information 3 times, just so that you remember it.
Just to make sure you remember.
Yeah.
I actually think that
that's a government thing, because everything
thing that came out between season 3 and season 4 that summarized all of season 3.
What the frack?
What the frack? I felt that summarized it really beautifully. Of course, you had to have seen the series, but watching this incredibly compressed version of season 1 through 3, it was a really good summary.
Yeah.
Freaking hilarious.
I loved it.
Hang on, what was this?
It's called Frack.
The last fracking special?
No, what this was is this was a bridging piece that was designed to get you up to speed in the gap between season 3 and season 4. So what it was, it's a little bit like Star Wars in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And it had the same sort of thing. It was just a voiceover, watching all the different scenes and occasionally letting the voice of the characters come in. So it was like, blah, 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 he picks up a cordless phone in a world where the paper does not have corners. You know, blah, blah, blah. Cylons look like people now. Some of them look like models. And it just kept moving, you know. Someone's hotels, you know. But blah,
and then
blah,
she
blah,
showed
blah.
Him
there's
the
a poster. And it just kept moving at this incredible pace. And it gave you all the necessary plot points and all the major character faces at this incredible speed. And it was so light.
And if you blinked, you missed.
Oh, you could rewatch it multiple times. You always got something new. It was very, very well placed. Although I just jumped ahead.
Well, I think one thing worth mentioning about the miniseries, which is never revisited, and I don't think it's revisited, retcon out, is Cylon blowing his spine.
That's because the creators realised that Guy's Belter would have an imperfect silent detector in his pants.
Yes.
the fact that they were indistinguishable from humans except for certain really blatant problems.
Yeah. Glowing spines, fibre optic cables into their veins, you know, indetectable.
Which they never actually sort of
ability
pick up
to successfully
on.
Communicate with raiders by staring at them.
Yes. and the other problem, if they're genetically identical to us...
Yes, it was problematic. Most of us chose to go, oh, damn it, I like the show, I'll keep on.
Well, genetically, genetically identical to us to our standards of technology, which we all know doesn't have much computing power, because network computers.
We don't have the ability to crunch those numbers.
No, but
yes.
Look at the person building the Cylon detector and the distractions around him at the time.
Yeah. It's a cricket.
It works.
So
yeah.
Bought the entire series. It's out of Soyuz 4.5. I've actually seen the very last episode. I'm not going to spoil it in case nobody has.
We're ignoring that.
We are spoiling.
I would seriously suggest. are sitting down and watching it from the beginning and don't miss a thing, because once you've seen the very last episode, you go back and see things and you go, now we know why they did that. That makes sense now.
Oh, they finally justified that. Thank you for tying up some loose
ends. Much.
Yeah, I'm just curious. We've had a little bit of a discussion over. I have the impression that way back when he was running that Salem sector the first time, he ran whole life through it.
No, there was this fantastic comedy where everyone would come up to Baltar and say, you know, Rosalind says, you've got to test Adama. You know, Commander Adama might be a Cylon. And someone else comes up, you've got to test Ellen Tai, she might be a Cylon. And someone else comes up, you've got to test so-and-so, they may be a Cylon.
He actually knew that Ellen was a Cylon at that point.
That was Boomer.
No. He tested Ellen. Said, yes.
Friends of mine, years ago, we all said she was Cylon floozy model.
Yes. No, he did test Ellen because at the end of the episode. At the end of the episode, I will never tell, and he just goes, starts spinning his chair and watching Six do whatever Six was doing after the grass roll. No, that was the episode after, just before Boomer blows her head off, or attempts to blow her head off. Sorry, I'm getting Dwalim mixed up with Boomer in my head. But no, he did actually run. You've got to watch 6 Degrees of Separation. No, not 6 Degrees of Separation. What's the name of the episode?
Tie Me Down, Tie Me Up.
Tie Me Down, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. It's about the Maldivar reference.
Yes.
Yeah. A disturbing, disturbing movie. About the deep, deep love between psychological abusers and abusees.
Vickery Avril.
Would be a good way for, how did your friend finally convince you to watch it? Because I've tried.
She didn't. I just got time in my life.
I
find watching television very difficult. I have to really, really plan ahead. I've got the second half of season 2 of Dark Angel scheduled for 2000.
I almost hit wing because I'm watching the last episode. I have a program called TV, so I was watching it while it was playing. Well, my friends were watching in the U.S., so I was watching it at the exact same time, with about a 30-second lag. Wing comes in, and he starts grilling me about, oh, who's this? What's that? I want to strangle him.
Wing, shush. TV, watching. Bye.
Yeah.
No, I mean, for me, I tend to pick up television shows when the fandom around it that I'm connected to hits critical mass and I want to be involved in the conversation. So for me, if there's something interesting going on and I feel like it might be worth being part of, I'll pick up the show at that point. But I don't actually spontaneously watch TV. I have a TV watching support group that helps me continue to watch episodes because otherwise I flake out and don't bother.
If anyone's looking for a sponsor, or even better, someone to sponsor, I'd like to know more. back to topic. I thought we might skip ahead a bit into season 2.
Yeah.
You talk about critical mass and culture. Is it just me? It was around 2005, 2006, the season 2 of the Battlestar season 2 of Lost period. The season of every show has to crack about with, like, the same situation for a full 3 episodes where nothing goes anywhere. Like, this is before the writer's strike. We've got the hatch open. Oh, no, we're not going to actually go into the hatch. We're going to have a whole episode with cracking about elsewhere.
Yeah, season 2 was when the pacing slowed down.
We've got, you know, Kara on.
I actually grabbed at one point.
My feet's up in the chair.
We got horribly excited just at the very beginning of season 3 and went back and basically graphed every single episode. I got the entire game together and said, rate every episode for me. And we had a mass argument about which ones were good, wrote down who wrote them, and then tried to predict which ones were worth watching for season 3.
No, we're not fans.
Exactly where the season starts. Oh, sorry, season...
No, some people were...
Yeah, season one. Adama gets shot in the chest by Boomer.
No, Keppard.
Kara's on Caprica.
Rosalind and Cobalt. And Rosalind and Co were on Cobalt at that stage, are they? Or is that later?
No, that's later in season 2.
Okay.
Although Balta has crashed on Cobalt and spends the next 4 episodes very, very dirty.
Yeah, season 2 is mixing it up. And also, partly apparently that was a directorial decision, and what they were trying to do is they'd already done a full season 1 and it was very information rich. And so they're in season 2 and they're trying to find a way to keep the people who are watching it because of the storyline engaged, but also to provide episodes that were effectively beginning, middle, end, all in one, so that people could still drop in and start the show immediately by learning the characters and getting to know them and getting engaged. So what we started getting is a little bit less story and a little bit more, you know, soap opera in space, where we learned a lot about how people felt about themselves and each other and all the people they were shagging and how they felt about people they weren't shagging yet. And there was a little bit more emotional character stuff. And in some ways that was wonderful, because, oh my God, there's got a big cast, and there were all these people. And you were interested in most of them at some point, rather. So it was an opportunity to expand.
This is where I disagree with Anicia in terms of going back and watching everything. I would definitely pick my episodes. Mm. Because, you know, if you like the soap opera aspect, then some of the episodes are really good for that. If you like the adrenaline aspect, some of the episodes are really good. And if you like the intrigue aspects, some of the episodes are really good.
Speaking
it's
of
rare to mix all three of them.
Speaking episodes, did anyone actually like Black Market from season 2?
No. Yes. No. Yes, I'll defend that. Not because it contributes anything, but because it's a film
art. Oh, it's really a film art. It felt like Lethal Weapon in space.
No, it's not Lethal Weapon in space. It's the Monty Stone.
I don't object in a way.
And
to
and also, I get a kick out of that just on a personal level.
I enjoyed watching Starbuck in that.
Lee shuts down the black market.
And I enjoyed watching Lee in this thing as well. But once again, I really wanted in this arc, I really wanted Sora.
He gives Zarek a power base.
For me, we're challenging.
I also liked it was recognizing that there's crime and unreeling and all the normal things happening up in the fleet. And,
Speaking of civilian life and civilian political structure, how did everyone feel about the overall treatment of the Tom Zarek character, who was played, of course, by a co-opted previous cast member, and really felt like a, you know, we're bribing you so you won't, you know, yell at us later. And we really don't see much of him at all in season 3, except for, like, in two really cool scenes at the very beginning. And then, of course, in season 4, he was a bit of a nutter.
He was a bit of a nutter right to start off with.
Yeah.
The character, I felt, actually had an agenda. And he was doing his damnedest to get it. He wanted to take over, and he felt this, you know, messiah of all the anarchists. And I know that seems rather contradictory, but he wanted all the bad people who wanted to think for themselves to follow him.
And think his way.
Yeah.
I don't think
like
he has
like a shirt, you know, if you read the whole, do it his way. and I wasn't surprised at the end what happened to him. Well, I still kept saying, you know,
I don't think he ever has a clearly defined political philosophy. Mm.
I would say it's very...
other than possibly at the beginning, the workers control the means of production, so maybe they should have more of a piece of pie rather than the military, which of course need to have a large piece of pie because hey, the silence is going to destroy us all.
He was also very much out for himself.
Which, of course, is the perfect, you know, dichotomy of fascist versus communist.
But, I mean, you look at where he started from. Like, he started off as a rebel terrorist.
Mm.
And you look at how he ended and you go, yeah, okay, that's an obvious progression.
Mm. Yeah, they gave you pretty much everything you need to know about him before the character was introduced, before you even saw him. It's like, this guy, this is his background.
Which is good writing, because, you know, if someone shows up and you don't know who he is, and it's only the third episode in a series.
I mean,
in terms of, he turns up, he's clearly a bad guy, but he's fairly consistently a bad guy who has a point to make the whole way through, and it plays into the whole overall thing of Battlestar about means and ends. And he's always the other side of the coin where they are, and then right at the end, it's a great self-contained story about the coup and so forth, so it's worth seeing, but in that story, he's just a bad guy. He's no longer a bad guy at this point. And he kind of...
From my point of view, what happened towards the end was this is all that he was building up to, but they just got away from him. And everyone else was in charge of it, and he was just being used as a figurehead.
Yeah, his methods stop on the street to reflect that.
It makes it different because he was the one who said, kill them all.
Yeah, Gaten doesn't seem to have much control over the Quorum of 12.
I think Gaten was the one who ended up snowballing away from him.
Yeah.
He actually thought he was doing the right thing, and then Zarek came in.
Because that's always Gaten's role. Mm. Like, on New Caprica, Gaten was, like, under Baltar, and everything got away from him, and the same thing happened under Zarek. Mm. He thought he was in control, and suddenly things start getting away from him.
And
it's
of course,
like, what the hell have I got into?
With the Sharon model as well.
Yeah.
New Caprica.
Yeah.
I love another thing about this fandom.
we've just spent a lot of time discussing characters that aren't even in the main credits. Yeah. And, like, Lost, you know, they have an excuse. Their main credit goes for, like, half the episode. But Battlestar is like, well, yeah, you get your, what, six or seven core cast members, and they're immortal, and, you know, that they'll never, you know, die, etc.
Wasn't Duella core for a while? Didn't she get
credits? No, Duella was never core.
I thought she was credits.
No.
Credited in season 3.
Well, I mean, one of the things that they did die because of the pilot models that were in there.
What did you think of the credits, though? Because I personally hate them.
I like.
No, the bit where they show
little scenes.
I love that bit
because you've got sort of got the sound effects sometimes that fade in, and when you've got your eyes closed like I do, you're sort of like, okay, I've watched, breathing in now. And
do you close your eyes?
There's the back colors of the wine hitting me.
Do you close your eyes?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, okay. The whole theme of Battlestar, though, is context. The point of Battlestar is context. The entire context of society has just changed, and what was once good ideas, good law, and good leadership may or may not be. And the whole point of the opening credits is, here's things without context. Let's find out how the context matters.
Also, the opening credits mislead.
Yeah.
And also, the previously ons mislead because they'd have stuff that didn't actually show in the episodes. Yeah. No. It's like, oops, we actually didn't have time for that that last week.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could never take them seriously. I wouldn't really think about them when they were happening.
This will be on the special.
Well, given the original thing that was going to be in the Opera House and Kobol was going to be, hi, I'm, insert original cast member's name here, and I'm your guard, was going to be, you know, the end of season one. It's like, No. Let's have someone bleed out instead. Hey?
Yeah. I like that.
This is the opening intro bit with the explain. I just think about watching it every time because there's spoilers in a sense, but they film huge chunks of stuff that never happened and show them. I remember one in particular where it showed this during the clip montage. Showed a picture of someone holding a gun to Rosalind's head. Never happens ever in the entire series.
God knows we were waiting for it.
Kara held a gun. Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks held a gun too.
Not that scene as it was filmed or shown there. So it wasn't really spoilers in the sense that, yes, some of this stuff will happen, some of it won't, and there's some major things in there.
Like a creepy AU.
I think this is because of Arrested Development. It's all their fault with their, you know, next week on Arrested Development. Boltar and. Never mind, I'll stop that now.
I always considered it a bit of foreshadowing. Mm. Now, it was very short-term foreshadowing, because it was only that 45-minute episode that you were talking about. And it may not happen, or it may be interpreted differently. But, I mean, Battlestar is full of foreshadowing.
And it's also a great little quick way of making you feel like a salad. This is you're being downloaded into a new body. This is what has happened before and will happen again.
Actually, that was one of the things that really kept me hooked.
Yes.
Is that I constantly had questions and I speculated like crazy, and I really enjoyed doing that. Mm. Having unanswered questions made this series really enjoyable, and one of the reasons that the slowing of the pace in season 2 was problematic for me is because I would come out of the episode and I would go, same list of questions unanswered, and I wanted to just progress a little bit.
Or questions answered really simplistically. Awesome. Yes, there is no chip in your head.
Oh, okay.
Why do you need to have your head examined anyway? And yeah. What's with the constant fidgeting with your pants?
Also, we've been trained by season 1. Season 1 didn't pull any punches. Things happened really, really fast. And so you'd lost that expectation. Because, like, you know, some shows they play with you. Will he tell her? Will he lie about it for ages? When will it come back and bite you in the ass? There was less of that happening in season 1. You tended to find something out, and then you go, oh my god, that's really interesting. You could see the potential of dragging up 6 episodes, and then the next thing would go, blah, and you go, oh my god, and then you'd see fallout from that. And it was like, they had enough material to keep moving. And when we got to season 2 and that slowed down a bit, you were kind of like, do you have any more material? Do I trust you? Am I going to find out?
I like that you bring up the whole finding out about material that's in season 2, because there's material that actually happened in the timeline of season 2 that you don't find out about until season 3, which, of course, is like, wait, the OTP is hooked up and no one fucking told me? I mean, fracking? Fracking for the kiddies that's listening in? Fracking.
The turducken is a delicacy that you eat at Thanksgiving, I understand.
So yeah, season two, there was that rhythm and a slight sort of worry that they'd slowed down. I was like, I hope you're going somewhere really good. And then of course we got to the end and they did that amazing time jump forward and I was like, and that really broke it for me. And I would recommend if anyone was ever going to watch Battlestar Galactica and they were clean and they weren't ever going to watch it, I would watch episode 218 and I would just stop.
You've got to watch Pegasus episode.
So are you one of those Star Trek people that like everything to be, we're on a ship and nothing ever happens, that's bad, and
not really.
No one will ever really.
I just found season 3 really frustrating.
Really?
Yeah, but I found the second half, like once they got on the new character, it's sort of like, what I found annoying about most of season 3 was the whole Starbuck Apollo plot.
The boxing episode. See, that's just a throwaway.
Yeah.
How do you box them? How do you turn off live models? How come I can't turn off live models? You mean to say we could turn them all off?
No, I was talking about that horrible soapy where they spent the whole time in the boxing ring.
Oh, that. I enjoyed that. I really enjoy watching
someone. That would be,
But I felt that was self-indulgent. I was hanging for plot and I kept getting character development.
Some of the commentary they made about terrorism in the beginning of season 3.
I'm not saying I felt that the episodes were not inherently lacking in social value, but what I was there for is story, and what I was getting is I felt this way, you felt that way, now I'm going to hit you, I'm moping. I just...
They had a great chance to talk all this about...
Yeah, they
didn't occupation.
Yeah. And they talk about a whole bunch of really interesting things. I love some of the... Well, I'm filled with rage. Some of the storyline.
You know, but it's very light, very quick, superficial.
They covered the suicide stuff, bomber in the...
And
there.
All of the stuff that was going to be...
Collaborators.
Really, they went, oh my God, that might be a bit too topical, let's run away.
The biological warfare episode, A Measure of Salvation, you know, where you're thinking, oh, you're not going to, oh, God.
Biological warfare episode really felt like Roald D. Moore pissed Next Gen and wanted to sort of give one of those Aesops about genocide is wrong. Oh, maybe that... No, he was Next Gen, not Babylon 5, sorry.
No,
I get my, you know, really obvious Aesop. Yeah.
There were just basically a lot of episodes where humanity was clinging on to any justification for continuing to exist by its fingernails.
Mm.
And I'd gotten that message fairly early on, like, oh, hang on, the series, right at the very, very beginning, the miniseries. Mm. So I didn't really want to be constantly bludgeoned with the knowledge that these people weren't very desirable human beings and frequently made really poor choices.
I always thought that, once again, I'm skipping ahead, the point at which the series stops for me in terms of, like, all the things that finished was... the second last episode before the big end where they look at the wall of, you know, death and look, oh, Cylons are now part of the crew. It's like, well, you can interbreed with them. According to genetics, you're basically the same species if you can do that. There is no difference between Cylons and humans. This is now a civil war, literally, and humanity is worth salvation. It's just that... No, humanity isn't worth salvation because humanity doesn't exist anymore. It's just... people. Sorry.
One part of the species definition was missing, producing viable fertile offspring. They didn't know that part yet because they must have been breeding their toddlers.
That's possible.
Yeah, but the Cylons themselves, I don't think they would have been, shall we say, attracted to each other because it felt more like a family.
That was shaggy.
I can totally see some dead death happening there.
Hello, Cavill Ellen.
Yeah.
Speaking of which,
even among the children, there was 6 and 3 with their delightful little bisexual threesome with Baltar that eventually ended badly.
Yeah, I really didn't like that plotline because I actually thought it was made a lot more sense.
I have issues with Battlestar Galactica's representation of sexuality. Mm. Full stop. And I don't think inserting a retrospective dead angry lesbian character into the Razor episodes in any way compensates for that.
Mm. Yeah, see, I think the only queer member of the crew until season 4 happens to be a sociopath. Great.
Thank you for enhancing human relations.
Yeah.
The pair is viable because that whole thing that happens at the end where they're like the first, you know...
Mitochondrial Eve.
Almost like earlier. Yeah. The point that you were saying, they were actually more of
But
you're right. In the same sense, in the integral part of it,
We haven't really touched on the mysticism, which I'll call the fantasy element. You know, I know people didn't like the explanation for Starbuck that she's an angel, or the fact that Head 6 and Capra 6 could have been seen, because, you know, they were really hanging out for that midichlorian excuse. And apparently the idea that angel, which was a word that was cropping up in season 1, mm-hmm. Was an excuse that ruined the form.
Logan actually says it directly out.
I'm happy to speak to the Kara thing, because I have feelings about that. And I'm fine with Kara being an angel. I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is that we watched Kara go through emotional trauma, a little bit of growing up, more emotional trauma, a little bit of growing up, failing to grow up successfully, a little bit of growing up, a little bit of failing to grow up successfully, fucking things up again, being emotional, being angry. You kind of get a little bit invested in her pain. And what I experienced was watching her for four seasons going through all these different emotional experiences, and then going through a seamless transition that I didn't get to watch on screen, of going from someone who didn't know who she was, who was angry, who was frightened, who had failed at this, who wanted that, who was a complete being, to being someone who was mystically peaceful and vanished in the middle of the field. And I didn't feel that way about the piano episode. For me, it was like this really, really rapid transition from, oh my God, all this stuff happening, and then suddenly, bang, she's something else.
I thought it was when she jumped.
And I felt that was really abrupt.
Well, it reminded me a lot of what happened to the Cordelia character.
Well,
I agree with you, but basically,
so it wasn't satisfying. Basically, I needed a longer transition. Yeah, we put so much effort into her pain and confusion.
The angry, disturbed, problematic individual burned up on the planet. There was something else that came back.
Confused, angry. Occasionally hit people.
Died on the planet. What came back was different.
No, she still came back like that.
Emotionally, mentally, the same person.
Personally, I'm actually tempted to hand wave it all as our FTL drive goes through space time.
After watching the piano episode, where, you know, she's taking away, you had earlier the description of Daniel.
Yeah.
Who said he was a musician. The artist, the musician. There's nothing to say that
Daniel
wasn't a father, so she might be effectively in the same situation as Hera.
Except Daniel was murdered.
Yes, Word of God says it's not. Well, Word of God says it's not. But I don't consider the Word of God to be canon, because Word of God could also have, you know.
John erased the memories and contaminated the cultures. Kara was an interesting character. I felt she deserved more time on that. We spent so much time watching everyone being angry and sad and dealing with their feelings, and then she just went.
One conversation at a time, please.
So being this being Daniel, I did not think of that, to be honest. I was too busy with the when are they going to blow things up?
All the raising questions that weren't answered. Adama's message from that he receives there are 13 models.
That was from Volta. 12 models. There were 12 models silent. That was from Volta. He just has that as part of the. Yes, I did that as part of my genetic experiments. I could see a little. Oh, this is series 12. Fabulous. There must be 12 models. Yes.
So the serial number's on them. Excellent.
Yes.
I thought he didn't get. No, he didn't. He got told by the.
He got told by 6 and he passed it on as an anonymous note.
Yeah.
So.
Which is what 6 believes.
Yes. And which was really annoying for me, because around season 2 I just assumed that I'd see most of the models and there was only one left.
The writers have actually indicated that Daniel was an oversight on their part.
Mm.
They realised later that they'd missed one. So they created Daniel as an oversight, and he was meant to be a throwaway line to explain the model. And the writers were mortified how we all just took that and started going, Daniel is Kara's father, Daniel is this, Daniel is that.
It's sort of so, like, which is funny, because this has so many parallels to Blade Runner. Every James almost really likes to think it's his chance to be Harrison Ford in Blade Runner. because, you know, he was Gaff in Blade Runner. And, of course, Blade Runner has the same continuity gaffe at the beginning with the yes.
Yeah.
And what, some got fried in that blah 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 blah.
All fixed in the final cut, my friend.
Oh really? I haven't seen that yet. I'm waiting till it's out on like blue God Ray, which bends directly into your.
I watched it. I was really surprised that I was really bored. I didn't want to feel that way, but I actually just went halfway through. I was mumble when he did something else. Which was, no, I got given it as a present. It was beautiful. I was totally in love with it. I sat down, I got halfway through, and I went, I would rather be cleaning my toenails. I was really disappointed to be having that experience.
What are we talking about now?
So we can quickly jump
on Blade Runner. Okay, cool.
It's okay. It's sort of.
I don't remember the toenail cleaning episode.
It does not paint, which I felt was a major flaw of all the Blade Runner movies, that Jeff Jones almost does not paint, and nor does he cry.
It's a manly thing to do.
And nor at any stage is there any bromance between guys with patches.
Very disappointing.
Jumping back to Battlestar.
Yes.
Character-wise, how would you rate the villains and their motivations, Maya?
To be honest, towards the end, I didn't really feel there was much distinction between villains and not villains. They were just people with varying degrees of insane flaws. And I quite liked that, because it was a very grimly depressing story, and that's what we were talking about.
Yes.
And so I spent a lot of time getting attached to different people and then watching them being really flawed. Mm. And some people, like, it was easier just to dislike them insanely. But for the most part, most of them were well-rounded enough that you could find something in them that reflected some sort of, I understand why you did that, even if you still thought they were crazy or really, really, really bad. Like, I really liked Cavill as a character.
Yes.
I loved his. I loved his last 2 seconds of screen time, which is just, oh, crap! Which is just like,
When you find out that Ty and Ellen are Cylons, and then you go back to the occupation of New Caprica, where he's torturing Ty and sleeping with Ellen to
his
get mommy. Cylon's secrets.
Torturing his daddy and sleeping with his mummy.
It really puts Cavill in a psychopathic light.
Yeah. And the fact that he's been on the fleet, I didn't see you. You're not a Cylon, he says. You're not a Cylon. I didn't see you in any of the Cylon meetings. And he looks back, and that's just delightful. But, he was complicated and quite a powerful figure, because, of course, he's leading the Cylon Civil War.
The resistance
led
by
the bad son. Well, and so it's great.
The final five led the resistance. So
exactly.
It's always been a Cylon Civil War.
Yes, and which is awesome. So watching Cavill, because he was one of the most identifiably bad people, but when you get that whole jealous older son undermining, to a certain extent, that did sadden me plot-wise, because once again, 4 seasons, and it turns out that the whole thing happened because John was cranky.
Yeah, I felt that way about Star Wars.
Yeah, John felt a little bit inadequate.
Johnny didn't get his passive
one. Viagra could have fixed all of that.
I loved his speech, though, about being in a meat bag and not being able to...
Yes.
That was really delightful. And that kind of, I'm teaching the ape to be a real machine.
You know what this series really needs? Is someone to go through every single frame with Dean Stockwell and Surf Bender. You bloody meatbag. Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad. Squeak.
Yeah. Or not.
I need to
being that complex. And I like the fact that you found it very, very difficult to not identify with someone. We talk about Zarek a lot, but He talks such a good talk sometimes. Yeah. We've got to defend these people, blah, 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 represent, and everything he does with power is to undermine and manipulate people. He's really good at it. At no point was he genuinely compassionate or kind but he talked a really good talk, and it was actually kind of enjoyable watching him,
Superb politician.
Around people again.
And
that was really skillful.
His character was written up as the leader of basically a terrorist insurrectionist group, and that's what he'd need to be, and they wrote that perfectly. He'd need to be charismatic to
he was really, really good. People would die for him.
Yeah,
completely unjustifiably. Yeah, in a way, I come back to Starbuck, because Starbuck was consistently really bad at a whole bunch of things we needed her to be good at. As a member of the military, as a person who could, support her leadership.
No, Starbuck's great. Starbuck's unflawed. She's Jack Bauer in space. which is actually what Ronald Zygmunt said on the commentary in season 2. That she has two machine guns now. That's because I felt that that's what Jack Bauer would do. And why shouldn't we have a character that in this show, that genre, that's able to do anything that he or she puts their mind to?
It was deeply
because,
satisfying,
you know,
her break things and hit people.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that.
She's meant to be the action hero that can do
everything.
I would
say, walking that sympathetic line, sometimes that was fine. She stayed on the sympathetic side pretty much all the time. But you watched her constantly bugging things up, but mostly for herself.
Mostly when she had long hair, as Sophie pointed out the other day. Basically, if Starbuck's hair is long, you know, it's probably going to be a boring episode, but if she's cut her hair recently, then it's, you know, she's going to kick her ass.
Come on, what
so
about all those episodes in
the
Occupation? The
Occupation, when they finally got... And the
yes, with the Spork
went,
murder.
Oh, I'm so glad. Oh,
sorry.
Man, I love
and
what
Casey,
you do that.
The way Lurban just screwed with her mind with
Casey.
That
was
great.
That
was,
you know, this is your daughter.
Sequence. And watching him play house with her in that remade apartment and watching her just repeatedly killing him was really enjoyable.
And then that bit where she kills him with a steak knife and then sits back down to
and
dinner.
And very delicately. That was beautiful. Really beautiful.
That bit, that's
yeah. Seeing that stare and going, bad things happened there. Oh, wait, no, this is before the bad things happened.
Oh. This reminds me of the YouTube series The Next Generation, which is made up of lots of Star Trek clips that have been randomly... surrealistically edited, for example, that Data is a serial killer that paints things and they get shot out in space and blown up. I'd love to see a series of Battlestar things with every single scene with Starbuck in the oven, ending with Starbuck stabbing him in the space.
We've got about...
We've
got about
15
minutes left.
Now.
I'll skip to the ending.
Do we want to talk about the ending?
Skip to the end.
There's a lot of things we could say.
Upside down.
All right, show of hands. Who liked the ending and thought it was wrapped up? About half.
It's a big
hang
cheeseburger.
I'm not actually touching the ground.
It's very nummy. The
all right,
time you
who hated the ending and thought it was really, really poor?
50% of the room has indigestion for
damn
the cheeseburger. Right,
and who didn't vote? Another half.
After the jump.
Everything
after Starbuck jumping, brilliant.
Well, yeah. If it then went, yep. Galactica sailing over the moon, there's the Earth, and it cut there. The rest of it can just fall in the bin.
It wouldn't have fulfilled the prophecies. It wouldn't have explained Hera.
The jump should have taken them to the star where Starbuck, the gas giant that Starbuck fell into, because there's either some sort of portal or a resurrection ship down there. All of Galactica falls in. Everyone gets remade effectively as a Cylon, completing the theme they've been doing all season about the ship becoming a Cylon. They've all died. Starbuck's led them to their doom and yet they're immortal and they live on.
Sounds like quite a
satisfying
AU,
actually.
Because as soon as she goes to jump and the little sequence leading up to it even shows the painting she drew of that star.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw that, oh my god, I know what's going to happen. This is so awesome. And then it didn't. Oh.
I did find that a little hard to deal with because we've been building up this massive Starbuck Destiny, Starbuck Destiny, Starbuck Destiny.
Yes.
She played a short song on a computer keyboard,
yep.
And that was it. And I felt a little bit cheated in the same way that they'd done the Hera thing and the six picking up the child and Beltar being there and they're walking together. And I'm like, do you mean to stay with me four seasons waiting for you to carry a small child 150 metres?
Yes. And everyone meet up again.
Yeah, and like anyone could have carried her. She was small.
Yes.
And just I felt that there was this lack of mystical import. I felt cheated. It was
so you ordered more mysticism.
I would have happily gone either way, but the fact that it was just light.
But that's what I liked. Like the fact that the whole prophecy was basically this moment in which, yeah, sure, it happened, and therefore it was prophecy. But it had no significance.
No, there was a hugely significant moment. There was just a minor act.
Yes.
I'm just
confused. Like in the prophecies, wasn't Rosalind not supposed to get there? Wasn't she supposed
yes.
to die?
Dying leader.
I thought at one point it actually said she wouldn't
get there.
from the end of. From the end of the resurrection ship arc, pretty much they're all dying because none of them are immortal. So
I'm pretty sure
they all live in self.
She would leave them to Earth and then die or something
yes.
like that.
Yeah.
The question is, was it the first Earth or the second Earth?
No, I know
that.
Also, Starbuck's not actually died. Led them there, so.
But was she dying?
Well, she died at least.
No, she can't be the dying leader, though, because she wasn't dying. She did die.
Well, she was the one that's been known to die.
I think you can also
like the dying messiah who was resurrected.
I think they were pretty clear about pointing at Roslyn as far as being a dying leader.
And the journey could have been that last flight that Adama took her on in the Raptor on Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, it's prophecy. You can read it however you like.
So, yeah.
Well,
no, where he wanted to. Mm. I don't feel like Adama being Adama didn't wait out the last moments with her, take her back up to Galactica and sail with Galactica.
Because she didn't want to be on Galactica. Galactica was the side of her bird.
Apparently some sort of weird emo thing he had to do where he rejected his one remaining son again and went off to sit on a hill with his dead girlfriend.
That's okay. he really liked Tyre more.
The final five escaped from Earth One. Yeah. So where did they come from? What was the rebellion?
Have you not seen the really awesome timeline chart that was on IO9?
Oh, that
the same
was great.
Week? Oh, it was so good. It has like four separate timelines with that are numbered from 1 to 51, plus like an extra timeline. 21A, 21B, 21C, 22. And basically, so where they came from? They came from the 13th colony, Earth, which they saw was about to be blown up by another civil war between machines and, well, a civil war between silent machines and silent humans. So they go, fuck this. We've got resurrection technology. Let's go find someone else that wants it and tell them that it's bad to be using robots as slaves because it's bad. Okay, and so they come back to the 12 colonies, and the war's already happened. So they go up to the machines and say, "Hey, we'll give you resurrection technology if you just stop killing."
And people. That's what causes the armistice. Yeah.
And then Cavill goes, "Fuck you, mom. Fuck you, dad." We have the series. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Frack. As I say, turducken. It's a November dish.
So the Verisylon Centurions rebelling against their asylum as humans.
Mm. Okay. So basically,
the cycle of abuse and violence continues. Everyone who steps in and tries to fix it fucks it up.
And that's what I loved about the ending, because it showed us here now and our current robotic advances.
Mm.
And we're almost there.
Which was, in a way, was kind of delightful, because it was a completely amoral show for four seasons, in that people constantly demonstrated bad behaviour. And then right at the end they said, and learn from our examples and be good.
Well, at that point they realised that the human race was completely broken, because they tried making cities and it failed. And it wasn't because of the silence. Silence is just an excuse. They were wallowing in misery.
I was speak practically for a moment, too. It's my personal belief that if mitochondrial Eve did manage to reproduce, the only people she successfully managed to reproduce with was one of the native Aboriginal people, because I believe everyone else from Galacta would have died out, because I have never seen such poor occupation planning in my life.
Mm.
Oh, my God. They were all dead. We didn't even have to wait for an ice age. Dead, dead, dead. Also, I'm deeply offended that the idea that 40,000 human beings were going, oh, we'd better breed with the natives, because then we'll be able to survive.
By then it wasn't 40,000, because the...
What were they down to by then?
Okay,
now I've done a little research.
37.
I've done a little research, and I'd just like to talk to you very, very briefly about the concept of minimum viable population.
5,000.
MVP. Yes. Giant pandas between 60 and 70. So if you want to keep, you know, a vertebrate mammal species going, and you want a reasonable amount of genetic diversity so that you've, like a reasonable amount of genetic diversity, 5,000 will do you nicely. We could have stood to lose a good 80%, and they still could have survived as a species. Now, I object to this whole cultural appropriation. Awesome, new planet, always occupied, oh, who cares?
I'm never voting for you as president, because you will let most of us die. I just wanted to say this now, but continue.
You know those personality quizzes that ask you whether or not you're likely to survive the apocalypse?
Yes.
I have always.
Roslyn's having a discussion with Apollo, where Apollo's going, we have to save more, and Roslyn goes, technically, 80% of us are expendable.
Yeah, well, Roslyn's a cuddly fascist.
Having said that, if you wanted to continue the population at the same rate and you wanted to be able to expand, we did the modelling on that too one afternoon. And I can tell you...
You did have time.
This was back during season 3 when we had a short, passionate burst of 49,000, that's a lot of people. Surely it's not like that. And we were going, well, okay, we thought that was back when there were 49,000. And every now and then Rosalind was morosely changing the number on that whiteboard. And we were looking at that saying, well, what exactly does that mean? And so we took the current Australian population demographic, went, oh, probably no children made it. Probably no, none of the really old people made it. And then took those numbers and just sort of shoved them back into the rest of the demographic. So that there was an unnaturally large, I'm in the sort of middle age ranges and healthy chunk. And then, okay, let's just assume 50-50 girls and boys. Let's talk about reproduction. And if you talk about how many people have to be pregnant at any point in time in order to sustain, and we assume at this point they're not under war conditions and not suddenly, you know, spontaneously dying in the thousands every now and then, you have to spend a lot of your time pregnant in order to keep the population at the same sort of level.
Out of curiosity, you did all this during season 3 where not much happened because writer's strike.
There wasn't anything else to do.
No, yeah, writer's strike. And I must be said, even though season 2 was pretty awful because they had that extra blowout of extra episodes to fill in, so they had lots of onces. And sure, the studio liked that, but really. On a scale of 1, where that's heroes, and 10 being BBC shows which didn't actually have a writer's strike and therefore continued on their quality, merry way. Where does someone rank Battlestar in the affected by writer's strike, like level of quality degradation? Oh my god, I can't believe they did that to Kenny, you bastards.
I didn't actually notice much effect. I mean, it stopped for a while and then it started again, but I didn't see a huge
hit. The timing varied. For me, I felt like season 1 was very, very punchy and just kept moving. I felt that season 2 started to introduce episodic episodes that you could watch as individuals. I felt that season 3 really pumped up full of those episodes, and I could see that some people, that was probably really enjoyable, and for me, I was just like, where is the story? Oh my god, have you run out of plot?
Oh my god, what
And
are
I
you?
Was worried. I was like, were you copying someone else's story and have they run away? Like, you know, do you have nothing else to say? And that was where my trust started to waver, and I started to think, I'm really worried you don't actually know where the hell you're going. And I'm worried that maybe the questions that I have are never going to be answered. I look back, actually, on a few angsty blog posts, so I was a bit sad. And then with season 4, I'm like, I really, really want this to be good. And the pace picked up almost immediately. The first couple of episodes, you came back in, and it almost felt like being back in season 1. And that was really, really enjoyable. And then it varied a little bit. And then I mainlined the last 13 episodes in one sort of extremely focused period of time.
Whilst programming a song comp.
But actually, I was taking the Supernatural newsletter. Let us not go there.
It also helps that, you know, season 4 begins with Kara's back, and, you know.
So for season 4, together.
They see them.
Yeah, I didn't have that same sense of. But once again, there was a lot of character stuff happening. And I mean, one thing for me with the finale is that it was very, very long. And they arrived and they made some decisions. And then they all just stood around and talked and flashed back and thought about their lives and talked some more. And I can see that they were providing that for this kind of emotional closure thing. But I'd still been in a position of going, I want some plot! And so for me, I didn't want to watch them, you know, think about their feelings and talk about their feelings. I watched them do that a lot, and it hadn't been very satisfying back then.
Yeah,
and it had...
talking about the plot and their characters, they just got the big morality back to start.
Yeah, and so that was a bit difficult for me because, as I say... like, there had never been anything preachy, and suddenly right at the end they're like, preachy. And not only that, it's preachy from Beltar and Six, who are not fine beings. And I actually found it quite annoying that they were apparently angelic.
I just thought of it as like the epilogue that Rocky Horror always needed, where it's like, you know, Riff Raff and I've forgotten his name.
Riff Raff and...
Fucking hell.
What's with the Tadakin?
Doctor.
I know. Yeah, no, the butler. Wrote the songs. And yes, these mortals and their sexual hang ups and the fact we had to leave the planet, blah, blah, blah. I felt very much like the spirit of that type of epilogue. Like, we could have actually stopped just where Kara, like, vanishes.
That would have been. Nice, actually. I would have rather have had that than... I'm like watching Adama watch Rosalind die and then go and sit on a hill a lot. And once again, I'm thinking, you so don't have the skills to build a cabin. You know, I'm thinking, how are you eating? That looks like an African plain. You have no... You don't even know the Kalahari Bushmen. They struggle to survive.
That's how empty those plains were. And
yes. Man cannot live on antelope alone. They would...
Sorry. The point is megafauna.
Yes.
If you go back that far, There's all the...
How are the legumes at
that's
that
because
point?
They're all scared off by other bloody spaceships dropping out of the sky, man!
Not a single animal in sight.
So it's quite possible that mitochondrial Eve is the only member of the
Belgium. And that's the whole point.
With no real grounding in any kind of...
Well, this is
by the end of the season, surely it's clearly an allegory. Like, it's almost on the same level as the last episode of The Prisoner. Whereby you cannot actually ascribe any level of realism, kind of all that could have happened, to the series anymore.
There was a really strong sense of that. Yeah. You know, we're going to stumble across the landscape with a tiny backpack that I might take to Sydney for 2 days.
Yeah, but the whole thing
with my little girl, and it was very...
Either the three-piece suit is genetic memory, or it's a metaphor. The whole thing's
a metaphor. Well, it's the original series, of course, was very much tied up with the whole Mormon 12 tribes searching for a place to stay thing. And I actually look at Battlestar as sort of like a humanist scripture for, you know, kids, play nice with your robots and please don't, you know, be mean to each other.
So, before we wrap up, because we're almost out of time, what did people think of that last throwaway comment with projection, Baltar and Six, where I think Six goes, he doesn't like it when you say that. And talking about God. He doesn't like it when you call him that, yeah.
I don't know if they filmed that at a different time, but both those two actors felt like they were not acting, like they were, they felt surly to be back, have to be back on the set or something. It was really off.
I thought that those projections
that looked a bit tight with Baltar, I think he's put this on a bit of a weight.
And a couple of Six and Baltar getting back together.
Yeah.
I felt that was, once again, it was a very rapid transition. Yeah. You know, like there had been so much negative history, and then she'd been sleeping with Ty, she'd had the baby, there was a very, very strong emotional connection there. That was the whole justification of the baby being in existence in the first place. And then there's this rapid realignment with Baltar when he does this apparently one selfless act and stays behind to get shot. And it felt forced. I had trouble seeing that. I really did.
Although, seeing as they're head six and whatnot, they can see each other's head people. It's possible that they had like a night of talking with the head people. And sort of exchange head people and, you know,
I think you need to see a head person.
Head six was telling Six about, you know, he was really quite brave down on Copal with his shooting crushed down in the back. But he saved people's lives, and, you know, meanwhile, Ted Baltar saying, well, yeah, I wasn't very useful at all to Caprica. Sorry about that.
Something happened rather than seeing it. It wasn't, I didn't feel like that really worked. And I've been exposed to the we're mystically destined for each other plotline far too many times to be comfortable if it's not done really, really well.
I did like their way through, though, at the end, whether it was absolutely
playing the odds.
And she's going, complex, no, I think this time maybe it'll work. And the first thing that popped into my mind is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Expecting a different outcome.
It does rather change your relationship with the idea of God.
Yes.
And then anyway, the light shows up in the sky and then...
That's where we're going to have to wrap up because we're out of time. I hope we might have to do this again next year. Anyway, thank you very much.